from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up, protests and outrage and calls for action after an unarmed black man is killed by police in Minneapolis.
There are moments in our history so grim, so heartrending, that they're forever fixed in each of our hearts. A shared grief.
A grim milestone for the COVID-19 pandemic in the U.S. President Trump's beef against the media extends to social media.
You weren't fake. I would not even think about it. I would do that in a heartbeat.
And a tearful reunion for this couple.
You're kidding. Oh, my God. You didn't tell me.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues. Those are the sounds this week from Minneapolis, Minnesota, when outrage and anger over an unarmed black man's death manifested into violence. It all started when a video emerged of the incident showing George Floyd pinned down by a police officer. The officer kneeled on his neck. Floyd later died from those injuries. That officer and three others who were involved in the incident were fired from the job, but they weren't immediately arrested. Prosecutors in Minneapolis said this week they were conducting a thorough investigation, but it wasn't any consolation to protesters or even Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. ABC's Alex Perez has more.
Details on the officers in that disturbing video. ABC News has confirmed the white police officer leaning on Floyd's neck is Derek Chauvin. According to a police watchdog group, Chauvin was among several officers investigated after a fatal shooting in 2006. A grand jury later declined to indict. Also in the video, Officer To Tao seen holding back the growing crowd. Records show he was part of an unreasonable use of force lawsuit that was settled out of court in 2017. After swiftly firing the four officers, the mayor of Minneapolis calling for Chauvin to be arrested.
If you had done it, or I had done it, we would be behind bars right now. And I cannot come up with a good answer to that question.
Loved ones called Floyd a gentle giant. A former NBA player and close friend Steven Jackson says losing Floyd was like losing a family member.
Violence and clashes between police and protesters soon followed. A police station was burned, forcing officers to evacuate. Tear gas was used on protesters. And Minnesota Governor Tim Walz activated the National Guard. President Trump also sent a series of tweets criticizing Mayor Frey of a lack of leadership. Frey shot back during one early morning news conference.
Weakness is refusing to take responsibility for your own actions. Weakness is pointing your finger at somebody else during a time of crisis. Donald Trump knows nothing about the strength of Minneapolis. We are strong as hell. Is this a difficult time period? Yes, but you better be damn sure that we're gonna get through this.
One of the president's tweets on the Minneapolis protests was flagged by Twitter, but it was not removed. Details from ABC's Andy Field.
The president's Twitter followers hit a speed bump scanning his feed, a warning replacing a tweet about Minnesota violence saying Mr. Trump's language broke Twitter's rule against glorifying violence. But then the platform wrote it may be in the public's interest to keep the tweet up and let users click a link to see it. The offending tweet said Mr. Trump won't let thugs dishonor the memory of George Floyd, and then, quote, when the looting starts, the shooting starts.
Protesters weren't just out in force in Minnesota. ABC's Jim Ryan reports and the demonstrations that also happened nationwide.
As protesters setting off fireworks burned a police precinct building in Minneapolis, demonstrations erupted in New York, Denver, and Los Angeles. In Louisville, protesters expressed their anger at the death of George Floyd, but also demanded answers about the local case of Breonna Taylor, a black woman shot 8 times by police officers serving a warrant at her apartment. 7 people were shot and wounded during that protest. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
And while live, on the air, a CNN reporter and his crew were arrested by Minnesota State Police. More from ABC's Aaron Katursky.
CNN President Jeff Zucker spoke to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who apologized for the state police arrest of Omar Jimenez and his crew. CNN said the governor told Zucker he takes full responsibility for what happened.
Jimenez and his crew were later released from police custody. Good Morning America host Michael Strahan talked to Bridget Floyd, George's sister, who said she's heartbroken and scared for her own children.
How are you and your family holding up?
It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough for us right now.
And we know, Bridget, this happened on Monday night.
What was it like when you got that phone call?
I thought I was dreaming for a second. I really thought I was dreaming. Everything went blank. I had a very hard time taking that in. A very hard time.
We can understand that. And the Minneapolis police, they characterized this as a medical incident during police interaction. But what was your family told what actually happened?
We were told that a police officer had his knee kneeled into my brother's neck while he was handcuffed to the ground. That's all I could see in my head was that a police officer was putting all his might into my brother's neck to where he could not catch his breath. He could not breathe.
And to see your brother, he's telling police officers that he can't breathe. Very, very distinguishable. You can hear him say, "I cannot breathe," and to watch their use of force seemingly go unchanged. What is your reaction to that?
It's wrong, period. It's wrong. I don't understand how someone could possibly let an individual go out like that. He's yelling. He's telling the officer he can't breathe. I'm just imagining all this in my head because I have not watched the video. It's very, very devastating to see those guys do my brother like that. So everything that I'm being told, I'm just imagining it in my head. And it's very heartbreaking. Very, 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 very heartbreaking.
And Bridget, the mayor of Minneapolis, he said being black in America should not be a death sentence. I think we all can agree with that. And what is your reaction to that?
I have boys. That's very, very scaring for me. That could happen to them. So I need for those guys to know that what they did was just uncalled for. Someone could do their kids like that. It could happen to anybody. Raising boys coming up in this generation is very hard because you never know what could happen when they walk out the door. They're small kids right now, but one day they're going to be adults. They're going to be out here in this society, and they need to know what's right and what's wrong. They need to know how to defend themselves, how to stand up for themselves, how to talk for themselves. Because if I don't teach that to them, this world, this cold, cold world, would take over my babies.
And many say the George Floyd incident is just one example of a systemic issue with race in the U.S. ABC's Steve Osunsami takes a look at how these incidents, and much worse, have woven themselves through America's history and what can be done to move forward.
The prejudice and the racism that is at the root of so many of these incidents is by no means brand new. In 1955, Carolyn Bryant Donham told authorities in Mississippi that 14-year-old Emmett Till whistled and flirted with her at her family's grocery store. Days later, her husband and his brother kidnapped the boy, tortured him, and then shot him in the head. And in the end, they were acquitted of murder. It took her 62 years to admit it, but in 2017, she confessed to a historian that she lied. The kids today would call Donham a Karen, like the woman in Oakland who famously called police on a black family having a barbecue in a park. Over this Memorial Day weekend alone, there were at least three widely shared stories of white Americans finding black Americans suspicious or blaming them for something they did not do.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
What started off as a dispute in Central Park over a dog off its leash turned into this.
I'm being threatened by a man in the Ramble. Please send the cops immediately.
In this dramatic performance, she told police she was in danger when she wasn't. Video of what happened has cost her both her job and her dog.
I have a hard time being overly sympathetic for her. She's educated enough to know what is going to happen or could happen when the police come because she called them.
Tim Wise is the author of the book White Like Me.
Sorry, I'm asking you to stop.
Amy Cooper says that the black man behind the camera was trying to feed treats to her dog. She has since publicly apologized, saying she made false assumptions about his intentions.
If you live in a society where you have been told to fear black folks, not just to fear, but to have contempt for black and brown bodies. Even if you're a decent person, 99.9% of the time, you are still being conditioned to react in that way.
But Wise hopes that during these troubled times, more Americans can learn empathy.
And the next time a person of color is saying to us what their experience is like, maybe we'll actually be able to hear them because we'll be able to go back to this moment when we too were having to second guess our safety everywhere we went.
Officials later in the week arrested the officers seen on the video kneeling on Floyd's neck. Here's ABC's Ryan Burrow.
Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman announcing third-degree murder and manslaughter charges against Officer Derek Chauvin, the officer seen putting his knee on the back of the neck of George Floyd before he died.
We have now been able to put together the evidence that we need.
Ryan Burrow, ABC News, Minneapolis.
As tensions boiled over regarding George Floyd's death, a new grim distinction hit the U.S. as it battles the COVID-19 pandemic. This week, 100,000 Americans were reported to have died from the disease, even as all states slowly ease up on some restrictions. According to ABC News analysis of New York Times data, there still hasn't been a consistent 14-day drop in the number of key COVID-19 metrics in any state, although some states are reporting downward trends. But new hotspots are emerging. Here's ABC's Eva Pilgrim with more.
In just 3 months, unimaginable loss across the country, from a nursing home in Washington state to overwhelmed emergency rooms in New York. 100,000 American lives lost to the coronavirus. The president traveling to Florida. His rival, Joe Biden, did send out this video message.
There are moments in our history so grim, so heartrending, that they're forever fixed in each of our hearts. A shared grief.
As the toll grows daily, states now scrambling to jumpstart their economies with a patchwork of precautions. California, one of 14 states where cases are still rising. But in most counties, salons reopening with temperature checks, gloves, and masks. The mayor of Washington, D.C. urging residents to wear masks.
We know without a vaccine or a cure that we will see new infections.
Iconic destinations reopening. SeaWorld in Orlando on June 11th, and Disney, the parent company of ABC News, unveiling its plan for a phased reopening of Disney World starting July 11th.
And as ABC's Tom Yamas reports, the warmer weather brought out some folks who defied social distancing mandates.
After back-to-back pool parties at Missouri's Lake of the Ozarks, health officials urging anyone there to self-quarantine for 14 days. Cases of the virus still rising across 14 states, including Alabama. The mayor of Montgomery telling our Marcus Moore they're now low on ICU beds.
Is it too soon to open Alabama? Is it too soon to open this city?
Absolutely. I think it's too soon. We have to make sure that we are being guided by the data and not the dollars.
New York City, once the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic, is on track to start the first phase of reopening sometime in the early part of next month. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
I am confident we'll be getting to phase one in the first 2 weeks of June. I'm not going to fine-tune it any more than that because of all these conversations going on to determine the exact right date to start.
And a popular Florida destination is reopening. ABC's parent company, Disney, announced that Walt Disney World will move forward with a staggered opening plan starting July 11th. ABC's Rebecca Jarvis talks to Disney chief Bob Chapek about what visitors can expect this summer.
Disney CEO Bob Chapek outlining the new guidelines, which include limiting attendance, requiring face coverings for all guests and staff, social distancing, plexiglass barriers, increased hand washing and sanitizer stations, along with temperature and health screenings.
How different is the park going to look when visitors enter now?
Well, you'll see a lot more areas that are taped off that are going to specify what 6 feet actually looks like in the park. You're going to see a lot less density than you normally might see at a Disney park. While not everything inside the park will be open, most things will be open, and that will, of course, do the math. It's going to turn into a much shorter wait time.
Disney, the parent company of ABC News, drawing on its experience successfully reopening Shanghai Disney and Disney Springs earlier this month.
What has been the biggest challenge of reopening the parks?
I think the biggest challenge in reopening the park is the inherent sense of trust that the community places within Disney. That is a bond, that is a contract that we would never, ever want to violate.
This says jobless claims top 2 million in a week. Here again, ABC's Aaron Katursky.
In just 10 weeks of the pandemic, more than 40 million people have been laid off and applied for unemployment benefits. That's one in four American workers. The pace of new claims has slowed, but there's concern the unemployed may have a hard time getting back to work. A new estimate from the University of Chicago said more than 40% of pandemic-induced layoffs could be permanent.
And President Trump made his opinions known about moving ahead with the Republican National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina in August, despite North Carolina seeing a jump in COVID-19 cases this week. The president threatened to find another state to host it. Governor Roy Cooper says he can't say for sure whether it'll be safe to host a full-fledged convention.
I'm really not surprised at anything that happens on Twitter during this COVID-19 pandemic. We're continuing our discussions with the RNC and going to continue to put health and safety at the forefront.
Cooper and North Carolina health officials are in talks with the RNC about contingency plans. COVID-19 also spiking in two Latin American nations this week. ABC's Ian Pannell has more.
Brazil now has the fastest growth rate in the world, with cases second only to the United States. Some hospitals report they're overflowing with patients, gravediggers barely able to keep pace with relentless rising cases. Meanwhile, here in Mexico, the numbers also soaring, with more than 8,000 now dead. With spikes on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border, concerns growing over large numbers of people still crossing. Even so, Mexico plans to relax restrictions for business and tourism next week, with destinations like Cancun reopening to U.S. tourists.
Given your concern with Twitter, have you given any consideration to deleting your account, to just walking away from this platform you've been so critical of?
Well, you know, if you weren't fake, I would not even think about it. I would do that in a heartbeat.
I'm real,
but the news is fake.
That's ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl asking President Trump about his social media presence. The president has been active on Twitter this week. Besides his tweets on the George Floyd death protest in Minneapolis and the Republican National Convention in North Carolina, the president also promoted a debunked conspiracy theory regarding Morning Joe host Joe Scarborough and tweets on mail-in voting. ABC's Karen Travers has details.
The president expressing his outrage after earlier this week, Twitter added a blue fact check on two of his tweets, where he again falsely claimed that mail-in ballots are fraudulent. The president and his press secretary have voted by mail several times. The company said the tweets contained potentially misleading information and were labeled to provide additional context.
And that led to an executive order by the president. Here again, ABC's Andy Field.
2 decades ago, Congress passed a law protecting social media platforms so they could grow without lawsuits. The president says it no longer applies.
Social media giants like Twitter receive an unprecedented liability shield based on the theory that they're a neutral platform, which they are not.
President Trump telling his federal agencies to review the law in order to stop Twitter and others from fact-checking or censoring people, including him. Andy Field, ABC News, Washington.
Dragon SpaceX, unfortunately, we are not going to launch today. You are go for 5.100 launch scrub.
A no-go for the SpaceX Dragon mission. Bad weather kept the rocket grounded earlier this week on its first attempt. It's the first time that SpaceX is launching astronauts into space, with the final destination, the International Space Station. ABC's Gio Benitez explains what happened with the weather from Cape Canaveral, Florida.
We know that they're not supposed to launch if lightning is about 10 miles away. This lightning was about 7 miles away, so it was very close. And if they could have waited about 10 minutes, they would have been able to launch, but you can't wait 10 minutes. You have to meet that time so that you can meet the International Space Station.
Coming up, a happy moment for one couple married for more than a half century when World News This Week continues. COVID-19, no match for the lifelong love of one couple from Connecticut. ABC's David Muir has their story.
Alice and Jerry Krenke from Stratford, Connecticut, married nearly 60 years, 3 children, 6 grandchildren. They've never been apart for more than a week until now. Alice had to go into the hospital after complications from a heart valve transplant. They were worried about the virus. They were not allowed to see each other. So when Alice got word she'd be released, the family decided to surprise Grandpa Jerry. Listen as the family talks to Jerry without mentioning who's about to walk in.
Hey, I'll go get the quiche.
They say they're going to get the quiche. They're going to get Alice.
Are you guys gonna eat?
Yes.
You're kidding. Oh, my God. Oh, you didn't tell me.
On purpose.
Oh, honey. Oh, I missed you so much.
It was the longest they've been apart in 60 years.
How you feeling? You feeling all right?
I'm better now.
Yeah, you better now?
Oh. Now their granddaughter, Paige.
Hi, David. My name is Paige Hine.
Paige, on that moment.
We decided to take that video because we love them so much and we wanted them to have that to look on, and they love it. They love rewatching it together, and we are so happy that their love is seen by so many people now, and everyone deserves to be loved the way that my grandpa loves my grandma and my grandma loves him. It's so magical.
And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Joy Piazza. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York. Stay safe and healthy.
So tomorrow morning, you're going to get some urgent text from your cousin about this new information they just discovered on some janky website. You're going to be like, you definitely should not be basing your decisions on that, but I just don't have time to explain all of this to you right now. Well, guess what? I do. I'm Brad Milkey from ABC News, and I'm the host of ABC's daily podcast called Start Here. Every morning, we get you teed up for the biggest storylines of the day, and we do it in just 20 minutes. So start smart and listen to Start Here. New episodes every weekday on your smart speaker and your favorite podcast app.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.